Thanks. Okay, so an example of a case study that we might see in biogeography, this is a study of green turtles, green sea turtles that occur. There's a known population to occur on this place called Ascension Island. And the question is, all right, we're looking at this distribution of green sea turtles and we're trying to explain that distribution. In particular, we wanna know how this population became established on Ascension Island. This is an island that's located on the mid-Atlantic Ridge. It's about 2,500 kilometers from Brazil, right in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. We also know that green turtles are found in tropical oceans throughout the world. They have a broad distribution. And female turtles have, they return to the nest on the beaches where they were born. So they have high natal fidelity. Feeding grounds can be located thousands of kilometers from nesting beaches. So these guys are swimmers. They swim long distances. But we have this observation, the nesting beach is located on Ascension Island on this mid-Atlantic ridge. Here's a map of where that is, an older map, but here's the mid-Atlantic ridge and that star represents where the island occurs. So we wanna try to explain this distribution, this aspect of the green sea turtles distribution. One idea is that we could go with some sort of dispersal hypothesis that green sea turtles arrived to this island relatively recently. Some females strayed from their other natal beach and found this population on Ascension Island, which and thereafter established a new nesting beach there. We could also invoke some sort of vicariance hypothesis as an alternative. This would say that, well, it's possible that they arrived a long time ago, that maybe you have ancestors of the Ascension Island turtles. They nested on beaches of islands adjacent to South America and throughout the late Cretaceous. So going back in time, they nested on islands nearby. Over the last 70 million years, these islands have been displaced by seafloor spreading. So as we'll look, as we understand continental drift, we know from this theory that Africa and South America were once joined continents. And then the Mid-Atlantic Ridge is actually something that was generated by the separation of these continents. So maybe these sea turtles have been there this entire time on these different kinds of islands, and they just kind of remain there as the continents separated. So this might, this is actually a pretty important kind of question that we pose in lots of instances of explaining distributions. Did a population disperse to this area, or has it been there all the time and has become different through isolation and vicariance? So we kind of try to think about what kinds of predictions we would make and what kinds of data could we collect to test these different sorts of hypotheses. Does anybody have an idea that they want to put in the chat box? How can we tell if these populations have been occupying Ascension Island for a long time, or if they've dispersed there relatively recently? Okay, yeah, we could look at something like the fossil record. So if we had information on historical distributions from fossils, we would know something about how long a population may have been in that location. We can also look at genetics, right? We could look at the genetic record. If we know something about how closely related these different populations are, we might be able to put together the history of how individuals may have moved from one place to another, kind of putting together a map of that population connectivity. And we can look at different kinds of behavioral, if we know something about the behaviors of different species, of the species of the populations, then we know their tendencies and how far they swim, how likely are they to disperse, and how often do they go from maybe one beach to another, or do they have really strong natal homing where they only stick to their natal beaches. Yeah, good guys. Okay, so in this case, what we can do is we can use genetics, which might be the most contemporary kind of assessment tool that we have. In this case, we have a mitochondrial phylogeny based on mitochondrial DNA. And what this is showing is it's basically looking at the similarity of different populations based on their mitochondrial genome sequences. So here we have a population that tends to reside in Costa Rica and Florida. We have a population from the island of Cyprus. We have populations from Suriname. And then we have this Ascension Island population here. So we can kind of figure out where this population sits, and it's basically its similarity to in genetics to other populations. And from this particular study, we found that these researchers found, Bowen and colleagues, they looked at the genetics of the Ascension Island population and found that they're basically the same, they have the same genetic sequence as those that are nesting on the coasts of Brazil and Suriname. So they're really very similar to this population here based on that mitochondrial sequence. So based on that similarity in genetics, we would assume that these populations have been connected in relatively recent history. So they must have dispersed to Ascension Island within the last 10,000 years. So using that genetic signature, we can start to make inferences about the history of different populations and what they've been through. So you guys hit on another different point, though. It's really important to kind of study the behavior and the natural history of populations so we can gain a lot of information by knowing what individuals do, how far do they disperse, what are their normal behaviors. Here in this case, they found that the population on Ascension Island is actually genetically identical to the one that they find on the coast of Brazil. When they started tracking individuals, they found that maybe it's actually the same population, not just, a very similar population in genetic sequence, but these are individuals that are shared between the coast and the island population. So these, once they started looking at movements of individuals, they could see that green turtles nesting on Ascension Island actually migrate between these different areas. So it kind of shows how we can put together information on natural history, on behavior, on genetics. And if we have information on fossils, that's really great too, although that's harder to get like a really comprehensive, like large quantity of data on. But we can address these kinds of questions from multiple different lines of evidence to understand how species have colonized the different areas that where we find them today. Another case study, which is kind of cool and gives a good example of a biogeographic question, is from looking at mammal and bird diversity patterns in the Great Basin Mountains. If you've ever been to the Southeast United States, there are lots of great desert habitats there, but within, interspersed among, in that desert habitat, we have different mountain areas, including the Great Basin Mountains. And the Great Basin Mountains kind of form these different sky island habitats, these very isolated areas of high elevation amidst a sea of lowland desert. So this map here shows the areas of forest that occur above 2,300 meters elevation that kind of form these different sky islands in the Southwest. These different sky islands have really different habitats from the lowland desert that surrounds it. They have different kinds of lush forests, different kinds of pine habitats and different and high diversity of trees across those different areas that harbor and support a number of different kinds of mammal and bird species. So one study is to ask, how does the number of species that we find in these different sky islands change with the area of forest habitat available? It's a pretty cool system because we have different islands here that range in how big they are. We have really small areas of sky islands with much more extensive areas of habitat. So within these different like naturally formed islands of habitat, we can ask whether the number of species changes as we go across area habitats of different area. And this is a major biogeographic pattern that has been shown across many different examples, including this one here, where we expect larger numbers of species to reside where we have larger amounts of habitat. This is called the species area relationship. And it actually makes a really nice linear model when we look at it on a log-log scale. where we can actually estimate the kinds of parameters and the strength of that relationship. This is not something you need to know right now, but the species area relationship, this is how we represent that. The rate of increase of number of species that we expect to find in areas with larger and larger square kilometers. So it's a very strong predictable relationship. Okay, any questions about that? Those are just kinds of case studies and different examples for what we might find in biogeography, the kinds of questions that we would explore in this sort of topic. I want to tell you a little bit about the research that we do in our lab, and because it falls right in line with biogeographic questions. And you'll probably hear lots of examples throughout the course of the Andes and the Amazon, because that's sort of the focal region it's like our playground for science. our lab is really focused on understanding current distributions and future distributions of bird species across broad elevational gradients in the tropics. We work in these places like this. This is a photo taken from Manu National Park in Peru. This is located in southern Peru on the eastern slope of the Andes. So here we're taking this picture from tree line and we're looking down basically the eastern slope and the faraway places that you can see in the background. That's the Amazon basin or the foothills leading into the Amazon. We've been looking at this sort of elevational gradient among others in Colombia and Ecuador and Costa Rica with kinds of similar questions of what governs species distributions and diversity patterns along these broad scale areas that are also biodiversity hotspots in the tropics. And I like to kind of talk about this in terms of biogeography because it's such a cool field because we can approach this kind of same question from so many different angles. If we want to understand what determines species range limits, which is a fundamental thing about biogeography, we can ask it from a number of different angles. We can look at how distributions are tied to how species respond to their abiotic or physical environment. We can look at how species are governed by different kinds of biotic interactions that they might have with other species. Sorry, I'm trying to move the chat box so I can see. There you go. We can look at how landscape structure influences species distributions. Are there certain kinds of barriers to dispersal that are imposed because of the structure of the landscape itself, like large river barriers or mountaintops that prevent species from colonizing other areas that would otherwise be suitable kinds of habitat? Population demographics and source sink relationships also influence where species can occur and where the boundaries of species distributions are, as well as a whole host of other kinds of factors and dispersal limitation, gene flow, local adaptation, the continuing exchange of individuals across populations that influences the process of speciation and not just the colonization of new areas, but whether or not the colonization results in subsequent isolation and speciation. So all these kinds of things fall within the context of biogeography and trying to understand why species occur where they do. And of course, we'd be remiss not to look at how these kinds of factors are changing over time, and especially in this current environment where we're experiencing really rapid climate change. To be able to understand how species are going to respond to different new anthropogenic pressures, including a changing climate, we kind of need to understand or get a handle on these sorts of interactions or landscape features or population demographics that really affect species distributions contemporarily. These are kinds of the areas that our lab mostly focuses on. We like to think about abiotic and physical interactions, species interactions, landscape structures, and population demographics, but there are lots of other people within biodiversity, the research center and zoology that think a lot about these other kinds of influences on range limits of species. Another question that we like to ask, do processes acting on individual species apply to the general community, especially in places like the tropics where we have working with, just to give an example in birds, we've got really distinct species. All of these different species have unique natural histories. They eat different things. They have different foraging modes. They they're specialized in different ways, or they're generalists in different ways. Some of them require like fruiting trees, others require different kinds of specialized relationships with flowers, like this the sicklebill hummingbird, which Manny can tell you a lot about. But we're looking at how these communities change across space, what are the environmental correlates that are associated with species turnover, and even with all these different kinds of unique species, do we find different kinds of commonalities that that we can draw from in how communities change over space, despite all these very unique kinds of species with unique responses to their environment and other players in the environment. We like to work in Andes and in the Andes and then South America, the Amazon. This is one reason is because this is a place that harbors one of the highest levels of species diversity. We look at species richness patterns, as well as species turnover as different components of biodiversity, which we'll also talk about in this course. And where we tend to work is right here in the foothills and in the Andes, where the Andes meets the Amazon. And these are the areas with the highest species richness globally. We can also consider not just how many species occur in an area, but how much species change as we go from one place to another. So that's capturing something called data diversity, the change in species composition as we go across space. So these areas are not just hotspots of species richness, but as we go from one grid cell to another, we actually change this. We see changes in the species composition. We see species that are specialized to these narrow bands of Andean habitat. So that's another contributor to the overall diversity that we see in this area. It's not just the number of species, but it's how many species, how species differ as we go from one place to another, that alpha and beta component, which we'll talk more about later in the term. So just to kind of show that, this is a species called the hairy crested antbird, and it has a really broad geographic distribution. It occurs across the Amazon basin. It's limited perhaps by different kinds of river systems, but has a pretty big range. But if we look at species that occur in the Andes, they show a really different range size and shape. So this is a typical Andean species, the blue-winged mountain tanager. And it has a very limited distribution. It's only found in the Andean habitats and only in a very narrow elevational range. So this is a pretty typical distribution shape and size for these different Andean birds. We see this across tanagers, ant birds, lots of different kinds of species with really different natural histories, really different evolutionary histories, all tend to have these very similar kinds of distribution patterns. So kind of explaining these sorts of things is something that we're really interested in our lab. And kind of put this into perspective, this is sort of what generates those really high patterns of not just species richness, but species turnover. So if you move up and down an elevational gradient, we can go through the ranges of many species over a very short space. So this is that contribution of beta diversity to the overall diversity of the tropics. And the questions we're really interested in is what keeps these species so confined to these narrow elevational belts in the areas where they occur. We like to ask different kinds of questions like abiotic and what abiotic and biotic pressures influence distributions. Are species just really constrained to a very narrow thermal environment? Or are there other kinds of players like competitors or nest predators or mutualists that confine species to the areas where they occur? So we're putting together lots of data on basic distributions and interactions of species in their environment to try to answer these kinds of questions in our lab. Okay, any questions about that? That's kind of, I don't know, how our lab kind of intersects with biogeography and how those kinds of questions can be applied in areas like the tropics in South America. No questions, no thoughts on that. Okay, we just have a few minutes left. We have about 10 minutes left or a little bit less. but I want to tell you a little bit about who I am. I am American. I grew up in Southern Indiana. We're called Hoosiers. Don't ask me why we're called Hoosiers. That's just what we are. This is my home place is in Evansville. I grew up in Evansville, Indiana. It's kind of like the toe of the boot of Indiana. It's actually a really beautiful kind of Midwest habitat. I think growing up in the middle of Midwest woods had a lot of effect on my affinity for nature, for biology, and for ecology. These are pictures taken from the woods right outside the house where I grew up in winter and summer. I'll just assure everyone who's watching in horror is the news from the United States that our country hasn't quite like crumbled into disorder yet, but so far it's okay, but it's kind of a scary time to, you know. Anyway, we can talk about that any other time. So far the United States has not collapsed into chaos yet. I got my education at Purdue University, where I did my undergrad. That's in Northern Indiana. Basically, it's up here in Lafayette. And I started out as an engineer, and I decided after my second year that I didn't want to do anything about engineering. I really wanted to do something within biology, and I didn't find anything within the course curriculum that, you know, would keep me connected with nature and simultaneously becoming an engineer. So I made a decision to join biology, the biology department, and leave engineering. And I stayed at Purdue University to do my master's degree there. And I started working with a guy called Kerry Rabinold. He was my mentor for my undergrad and my master's, where I started working in the tropics. And I never really looked back after that. I did my PhD at the University of Florida, home of the Gators. And then I came to UBC actually as a postdoc following my PhD. And I was hired on its faculty in 2012. So I've been to a lot of school, well, a good number of schools that are really big on sports. So I love sports like football, because these are all big football schools, and it's a lot of fun. Some of my favorite things, including the NFL, are sports like soccer. I like playing weird musical instruments. I mean, the banjo is not that weird, but I like different kinds of African instruments, and I love all things associated with Marvel and Star Wars. And these are the cats that you will probably be introduced to at some point in the course, Higgs and Indigo. Yeah. Okay, that's pretty much all I have. Just another reference for the course. If you have access, if at some point you get access to UBC libraries, this is a really nice textbook to have if you want extra kinds of information and input and context for the lecture material. There are two copies on reserve at Woodward Library if those become available to you in the future. But we'll, if there are other kinds of references or resources that I think will be useful for you to give you a little bit of added context, especially if you don't have a lot of experience in biogeography or with this sort of content or material, then we can post those on the website or post those on Canvas once our Canvas site goes live. Okay, that is the cat's names. The cat's names are Higgs and Indigo. Higgs is the one that's looking curious, and Indy's the lazy one in the background. Cool. You guys have any questions, any thoughts, anything you're excited about with this course? Are you excited about favorite Marvel movie? Ooh, it's a toss-up. It's really a toss-up. I keep going back to things like, I think Ant-Man might be my favorite because it's just so silly. But I really like Captain Marvel. Black Panther is awesome. And then I have to like spend some time ranking them, but yeah. Preference for students leaving cameras on or off? I like to see everybody's faces, but maybe we can do like, you know, when we first join the session, it'd be nice to see everybody, just to kind of see faces and start putting faces and names together. Once we get into lectures, you're free to turn your cameras off if you, you know, want to focus on the material. When we do the tutorials, it'll be great to have your cameras on, just so we can kind of get to know each other remotely. So that would be my preference. Looking forward to the term paper. Wow, that's a, yeah. You know, I think it's going to be a lot of fun, actually. And yeah, you won't regret saying it. Maybe you will. It depends on how many other courses you're taking. It is a big assignment, and it's a lot to do. But hopefully with the kinds of steps that we're going to take to get you acquainted with looking at distribution maps, with looking at and analyzing phylogenies, it's kind of a fun exercise. Plus, you get to do it on an animal group of your choosing. So you can decide to do something that you enjoy doing research on. Ooh, favorite area in South America to travel in when I'm not doing work? I would have to say Colombia. Colombia has been my favorite place. And we have a couple of Colombian students in the lab, and thankfully they've helped me like navigate different areas in that country. And it's just incredible. But I, you know, it's pretty limited so far, but Colombia is pretty awesome. Thanks for all your questions and chats, guys. That's fun. Higgs is trying to really invade the camera. Oh, disable the waiting room for lectures. Yeah, it's a little bit tough for me to keep an eye on the waiting room while I'm doing, while I'm kind of going through lectures. So I can go into settings, I think, and disable the waiting room so you'll come right in. If that's preferable to students, to everyone, then I'll do that. Okay, yeah. I can choose a setting so students are muted when they join. Yeah, I'll do that too. Yeah, I'll look into the settings. There's still some things about Zoom that I'm learning. So I'm also open to suggestions too. Yeah, great. Okay, guys. Thanks for joining, and I'll see you on Wednesday. We're going to talk about geography and climates. And we'll start looking at patterns of major biomes across the globe. And yeah, I'll see you on Wednesday. Thanks, everybody.